Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
It's the Police Officers Association of Michigan podcast radio show, recorded live from our studios in Redford, Michigan. HOME is a full-service labor organization formed to provide every labor-related service from negotiations, grievance processing, legal and legislative representation to Act 312 arbitrations.
This year, 2011, the Police Officers Association of Michigan annual conference in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It was an exciting day, and this is actually, I believe, day two of the conference, and we had two great speakers this afternoon. And we had an opportunity before they do their annual poker run in downtown Grand Rapids this evening. We're sitting here in a bar, and what a better way to sit over a couple beers with some... we've got a retired detective and a retired firefighter from the New York City Fire Department. And let's just go right into it here. It's pretty informal. The guys are sitting here. Tim Brown, who's a retired firefighter from New York City and was there during the during when 9/11 happened. That was kind of the topic and the theme of this year's presentation at Palm, being the 10-year anniversary of 9/11 as well. And then Joe Blozis, who is a retired New York City detective, correct?
Detective Sergeant,
and more specific to crime scene investigations is kind of where you guys are going. So thanks both of you guys for taking the time out here, and thanks for coming down and talking to all the guys today, too.
Thanks.
I hope you have felt a lot of connections with individual conversations that's been going on today and tomorrow and just what's happening up here as well. I know there's a big talk of togetherness and the brotherhood of no matter if you're a firefighter, if you're a police officer, if you're someone that's in the Marines overseas, it's all about protecting civilians, protecting Americans, and everything that have happened. So let's start with you, Tim. You gave a great presentation this afternoon. You were up first. And I want to get into a little bit more about the film Rebirth by Jim Whittaker that's going to be coming out this summer, too. Being at the 10th anniversary of 9/11, there's a lot of different memorial services that are going to be happening, including a lot to do with the media and TV and the news. And I know you both are involved in individual programs. They're going to be getting some mass viewership. So give us a little bit of a history, Tim, about you. You were working in the mayor's office with Giuliani at the time?
Yeah. Mayor Giuliani brought me into, off the street, if you will, wearing a tie. And basically, we helped him to manage major emergencies in New York City, which you can imagine there were quite a lot of. So, of course, nothing quite like what happened on September 11th.
And you were in when all of this had essentially started that morning, that Tuesday. You were in Building 7?
Yeah, 7 World Trade Center was our office.
Okay, so you were literally across the street.
Yeah, the first plane that came in flew over the roof of our building before it slammed into Tower 1.
Okay. And how long were you a firefighter before going in with Giuliani?
That was around 16 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. What about you, Joe? Give us a little bit of history about you.
I served the city of New York for 28 and a half years. I retired in April of 2008. Out of those 28 years, 22 years was inside the Forensic Investigations Division, 13 plus on the crime scene unit, and the other time was split between the police crime lab. The day of this horrific act, I was just finished working a regular shift in the crime scene unit.
And you're getting ready to go home, and here it is. Now you've got to go back to work.
I was getting ready. I just came off an 18-hour shift. I was staying a little bit extra just to prepare for an upcoming training course that we were going to perform on starting that Wednesday. And literally, I was at the copy machine putting together the training manuals.
Jeez.
And then I was informed that better take a look at the TV. Something just happened down at the World Trade Center.
Tim, go a little bit into how the morning started for you and what kind of transpired. We're going to have a recording up on the POAM.net website as well of your presentation. But for those that didn't get an opportunity to listen to that yet, just kind of give us a little bit of a recap of how your morning started and what went through, and then we'll go on with yours as well.
Yeah, I mean, basically, the plane went right over the roof of our building and slammed into the Tower 1. My job was to be with the incident commander. On my way down, across the street there, we took a look at a few sides of the building, and we began to realize that it was not a small plane, that it was a little bit bigger than we had initially thought. There were bodies crashing in the street and pieces of the building and the plane coming down. And I went into the lobby. I saw my best friend, Terry Hatton. He was a captain of Rescue 1. And he put his big arms around me and squeezed me tight and said, "I love you, brother. I may never see you again." And he went in into the stairwell. He made it up to the 83rd floor where they were saving people and fighting the fire. Probably, you know, the most dangerous part of the whole building there. They were right there facing the devil. And, you know, Terry never came back. I lost 93 of my friends that day from special operations in the fire department. And, you know, I was lucky to get out myself. One of the things I forgot to mention today was that when I wound up in 3 World Trade Center, when it collapsed around me, there was actually a scientific study done, and the winds where I was were 185 miles an hour in that lobby. A guy, this scientist guy, came and studied the way objects went into the steel, and, you know, he proved that it was 185 miles an hour. So that's, in the end, that's where I was. And I, you know, the only thing I can say is that, you know, God just did not want me this time, because there's no, I should be dead. You know, I must be meant to do something. I don't know.
Now, I was talking with Jim Ticonelli last week when we were down in D.C., and one of the things he brought up was to ask you about the fact of how is it that when the first building came down, that I think it was a previous terrorism attack that happened, yeah, and there was restructuring and that's rebuilding right. That was done on your building, and it's only probably due to the fact that
that's right.
Those new engineering had happened.
You know, and I didn't know this story. Actually, I watched a documentary on one of the History or Discovery channels, and the guy they were interviewing actually was telling my story, and I was on the plane, and my jaw was on the floor because the guy was telling a story that was exactly what happened to me, and it turns out this guy was in that same area that I was.
Really?
And what he had found out was that the area where we were was the actual area destroyed in the 93 bombing of the World Trade Center.
Right.
And when the steel workers rebuilt it, they are so proud and patriotic to be Americans, they used steel that was like 10 times the strength that was required. So that column that I was holding on to, trying to live, was actually one of the new columns that they had put in. So my point is that these great American steel workers, what they did saved my life, and that's the reason I'm talking with you today.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you could look at it the other way. That's where God put me, you know, to survive. So.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of myself, of karma, and there are no accidents. Everything happens for a reason.
I agree.
You know? You were getting ready to get off of a shift, Joe, and here you are making packets for a training session, and you get the call. And how did your day start then? Or how did your extended day start?
Well, as soon as I heard what happened, my detectives in the office were saying, Joe, you better get a look at the TV. And when we did, it was obvious that a plane did strike the tower, but we're still thinking of the possibility that it was a small plane, Cessna. And then shortly thereafter, the commanding officer of the crime scene, the Inspector Jimmy Serra, he gave me a call and said, Joe, are you okay to do the investigation? Because he knew I'd just come off of an 18-hour shift. And I told him, no problem, Inspector. I'll get the guys going, and we'll take a ride down there and let you know. From that point on, we got a team of about 6 detectives prepared. And started driving down to the site with Detective Kurt Harris. And as we left the building, and I even forgot about this fact until literally years later, as we left the building, we got into the car, started driving, we noticed we had a flat on one of the tires were down. So we brought it right around to tire repair around a block from us, and they knew what was going on. They got their TVs on. They got their radios on. And they knew that with the crime scene unit. And they fixed that car as if we were in a NASCAR race. I mean, up on the things, 1, 2, 3, tires were changed, and off we went.
That's what you're saying. So flat tire, essentially, you had mentioned two in your speech earlier. that flat tire and being delayed 3-4 minutes.
Well, that 3 or 4 minutes could have been the matter of either you're going to die or you're going to live. And the reason behind that is we're responding from Queens, Central Queens, Jamaica, Queens. We have to go into Lower Manhattan. Normally that run could take, approximately a half hour, 40 minutes if we're pushing. And that's exactly what we were doing. We were pushing to get down there. As we got onto Manhattan Island, we're heading south, and we heard that another plane just hit the second tower. I looked at Kurt. Kurt looked at me, and basically we said we're at war.
Yeah, we're under attack at this point.
It's quite obvious what's going on, and I couldn't believe it. To this day right now, I'm getting goosebumps about just thinking about it. But once I heard a second plane hit, I just said, oh, my God, this is... Kurt, this is the big one, man. We're literally at war.
I think that's something that myself, anybody in this room, or any American can really look back on, especially now at our age. My parents talk about, or my grandparents, knowing where they were when JFK was shot. And everybody can look back and remember exactly what you were doing that morning when you heard about, the towers being hit and what transpired throughout that day. And I guess almost your connection to somebody that knew somebody, like yourself, both of you, very close friends, people that you've had relationships with professionally for years, that you see them 1 minute and later on they're gone. So, I mean, everybody has a connection to that some way or another. You know, one of the things both of you talked about in both of your speeches was the fact of the American spirit. And I think, Tim, I wrote this down in my notes for you, but you really went pretty deep into that as far as about the American spirit. So elaborate a little bit more on that.
Yeah, I guess the first thing I noticed about the American spirit that day was when I was going into the mezzanine level of Tower 1 and the civilians were evacuating. Now, these folks weren't injured. They were just getting out of the building. And I noticed that every person who was pregnant or obese or disabled had 4 or 5, like, guys, office workers, just regular people that went to work that morning.
People that may not even have known them before, just stopping to help out.
That's right.
Because of a tragedy.
Yeah, and that strength of the human spirit and of the American spirit gave me strength, just seeing that. You know, these people knew that we, the firemen running in had other things they needed to be doing.
Yeah.
And the cops and the firemen had to go up the stairs and get the people that were in real, real danger. So these guys stepped up, and they took care of people. I saw them, they would grab an office chair, and they would put a disabled woman in the chair, and you'd have 4 guys carrying the woman down the escalator. It was really just amazing. And throughout that day and in the weeks following, America came together. We put our differences aside, and we all stood together. And it showed me that when the chips are down, what a great country this is. And I'm so proud to be a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I welcome our listeners also, too. This is a very intimate type of a conversation, and we're jumping all over the place, but I welcome you both, too. We'll have both of their presentations at the Police Officers 2011 conference available on the website in full length, and I invite both of you to go through that because it's very one-on-one. It's nice and quiet, not a bar atmosphere, of course, but it really helps you understand and picture exactly what happened as being brothers in law enforcement. Couple other things is, Joe, I want to move over to you because your background a lot is in being a detective sergeant, but also as far as a crime scene investigator. And you actually have, thank you very much for being privy to the new special that's going to be on Discovery Channel coming up later this summer. And what's the name of that
show? 9/11 Crime Scene Investigators.
Oh, sorry, 9/11 Crime Scene Investigators, which you're also cast in that, talking about it and really going back into how I think it was important to point out that the entire scene became a crime scene investigation as opposed to just a complete destruction area.
Absolutely right. I mean, in the beginning, everything was search and rescue. And that's understandable, that's common sense, and that's what had to be done. But the reality of the matter is that this is the world's largest crime scene. And in due time, we're going to have to make sure that we cover all the bases and treat it and process it just as that of a crime scene. And documenting and collecting evidence and packaging the evidence and recording it and proper storage will play a pivotal role in any type of court proceeding that would come down the road, whether it been months, years, decades. But you have to treat that as a criminal investigation. It was not a building collapse per se. It was a homicide. The building collapsed in a criminal manner, and it didn't occur from accidental means. They knew exactly what they were doing. It was a calculated move on their part, preconceived, and it's a criminal investigation.
A couple other things that I want to bring up. Some of my notes that I wrote about earlier, actually.
How's that? 10987654.
All right, we're great. You know, we talk about a number of different things, and I guess I just want to do it in a broad stroke, but economic toll of what happened. Joe, during your presentation, I'd almost like to be able to get some of the PowerPoint of the actual points that were on there. I think that'd be great for people to really look at. And you brought up continuously throughout it some of the underlining, which you seem to be pointing out, was the economic impact that it had, not only in New York City, Manhattan, but in the world, or in the United States, but the underlining components of the money. And I was really surprised that when you, towards the end of your presentation, recapping on some of the builds of the memorial and the new towers that are going up, their anticipated time of going up and the cost of doing so. I guess elaborate a little bit more about being about pointing at the money.
Okay. First off, the number one priority on this is are the victims and the heroes that died inside that tower. Those victims' families will never be the same. Money can never replace their lost loved ones.
Of course.
But secondary from the victims is you have to look at an economic point of view. And by this I mean is New York City endured a terrible time thereafter. I mean, tourism dropped. There was definitely an economic downturn in New York City. They lost multi-millions of dollars from the tourist industry coming back into the city. Jobs were lost. After the Ground Zero was completed and everything was cleaned up, in due time, they started planning what's going to be on the site. Let's build the tallest building in the world and go higher than the World Trade Centers were and so forth and so on. But a lot of people have to realize about, economic impact of this huge project at hand. Number one is to clean up the site on its own. Cost over $650 million.
And that's a direct cost to general taxpayers?
Well, it ends up coming from the federal government. It's federally subsidized. But bottom line is, it's you and I that's paying for this. And City of New York, they don't have it in their funds to pay for something like this.
Of course.
City of New York doesn't have the funds to prevent another crime like this. They need federal aid. And that's why we can never forget what happened that day, and we got to make sure that we get the proper federal aid into our great city and into the other cities that are threatened as well. But this plan for the World Trade Center site, each and every building is in the billions, probably 3+ billions per building.
Now, obviously there was owner of the two towers from previously. And I know there's lots of speculations about policies of terrorism and everything else, of policies that were purchased and put on those buildings beforehand. And I want to go into some of the conspiracy theories so we can debunk some of those and get some of that out of there. But who's going to be paying for all of this rebuilding?
Well, right now it's coming by real estate developers, contractually, banks. They are renting out the floor space as we speak. One of the towers right now is probably about 90% sold, but we're talking thousands of square feet between commercial.
Tens of thousands.
And be reminded, we have quite a few buildings that's going to be constructed. So bottom line is the money is out there. It's being brought in. But to answer you where all that money is going to come from, I don't know. I hope that it will be a very viable place to open up businesses in New York. We certainly could use the additional workforce, and I hope down the road a lot of major companies come back into the city of New York to work.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to happen. That's just the thriving pulse of it all. Like you two, I lost a friend in Tower 2, and me and my wife had went there in November of 2001, and the due process of going through the airlines, but then also going down. You made mention about the commercialization that happened with the tragedy, and that's continued to happen throughout the years. We were ultimately disgusted and appalled. I came to the point of wanting to strangle some people down there visiting that when that had just happened as well. So I am too with you as in regards to that, and some of the respect and some of the components that happened off of that were just really, really horrible. The mosque. Tim, you brought up some very interesting points on that that I wrote down questions and I really wanted to kind of dive into. I know both of you can throw your two cents in that, but you're pretty at the forefront of some involvement of some things that are going on with opposition of the mosque going in. And there's some underlining components I also noticed, too. So share those some with us as well.
Well, you know, I got involved. The families came to me and asked me to get involved in that. And, you know, at first I was a little bit reluctant, I guess. But as I learned more and more about the people behind this, I got more and more concerned about it. And, you know, the fact that, I guess it comes down to this, the fact that they know that it hurts the families and they still want to do it, that tells you who these people are. As we dug more and more into Imam Rauf and Sharif El Gamal, we found out who they are, and they are Sharia pushing Muslims, and they want to push Sharia law in the United States of America, and it's of great concern to us. It's the same ideology that drove the terrorists to fly the planes into the towers. And it greatly concerns us. I've confronted both of them, both on television, in debates, and personally. And what I found in the end is that you do not get a straight answer from them.
Yeah, you were saying they really know how politician-wise.
They're the best. Walk. They're the best politicians.
Yeah, to walk around the answer and never really answer you.
They actually have a word for it. They call it taqiya.
Taqiya.
And it's something that Imam Rauf grew up knowing how to do. He knew how to lie and get away with it.
Now, where are they getting the money? Yeah. You talked about the purchase of the property down right there being so close, but where are those funds coming from? Are these wealthy businessmen, oil heirs?
They paid $4.85 million in cash to purchase the property. To this day...
Which by no means, that's a nice penthouse. That's a nice piece of property and a building down in New York. It's not unheard of prices.
That's right.
Not completely crazy.
Right. And when we asked them a simple question in the beginning, I mean, this is almost 2 years ago now, where'd you get the money? And they still, to this day, have not answered that question. They still are hiding it. We suspect it comes from United Arab Emirates or Saudi Arabia, from the same places where some of these terrorists came from. And, you know, we put up a big fight. I mean, we fought the President of the United States. We fought the United States Attorney General. We fought Mayor Bloomberg. And it appears
that Bloomberg doesn't seem to have too big of an issue with this.
No. He's a huge supporter of it. He's the mayor that stood on Governor's Island with the skyline of Lower Manhattan without the towers and wagged his finger at the 9/11 families and told us we should be ashamed of ourselves. For opposing the mosque.
So I guess there's a lot that can be read out of his motivations towards that.
Well, I will say that his company, Bloomberg, the financial company, released a Sharia-compliant index tool about 3 months ago. So he is neck deep in this. From what I understand, the company is going to double their money in the United Arab Emirates by coming out with this tool. So, you know, you can draw whatever conclusion you want. Sure. I know the one I draw.
Right, right. Joe, you went into a bit about as far as the public not really understanding what has happened since then as far as terrorism in America. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about the media, too, because that's something that's continuously, especially now with the execution and completion, essentially, with the killing of bin Laden. But there's always been a large amount of debates over the past decade about the media, who owns the media, and what they want to report on. You brought up some very, thank you, Craig, you brought up some very good points about the fact of when we killed bin Laden and that mission was complete, essentially, you were doing a speaking engagement down near Ground Zero as well. And what did you see and come across?
Right, that was an unrelated lecture. Nothing to do at the time with the World Trade Center. Just as coincidental, it was on the morning after when President Obama came out on Sunday evening notifying the nation that Osama bin Laden has been killed.
What time did he do that? It was early Monday morning, wasn't it?
Well, it came out Sunday evening around, I guess it was around 9, 10 o'clock at night.
Okay.
That's when he, addressed the nation. I was down, I had to do a speaking engagement in Manhattan, and I purposely left early because I was kind of drawn to the site, to Ground Zero. I wanted to see exactly what was going on. And when I got down there, came up out of the subway off of Broadway, and the first thing that I noticed was television cameras, satellite trucks, goes on for blocks. It's a media event. They are interviewing anyone that
any passerby.
Get, any passerby, they're interviewing them. Some of the people that they're interviewing, it was quite obvious that 10 years ago they were still, grade school. And I understand they have a job to do, and they were doing their interviews. And then I started looking at the site myself. And as since 9/11, it's been a tourist haven. And there were quite a few tourists from all over the world, all over our great nation, that were down there. Mostly just to look. What I don't like is when I see vendors down there hawking Ground Zero memorabilia, such as statues and patches and stuff like that, but they were out there. The police department does their very best to try to get them out of there, but as soon as you push them out and somebody else takes
their
spot.
They turn the corner and come back. And yep. Like I said, when I was there right after it happened, that was already down there.
There was one woman that I actually spoke to. She was doing a quick little makeshift memorial, and I could see that she was saying a prayer. And I kind of just told her when she was done praying there, I says, listen, I don't know you, you don't know me, but I want to say thank you. And I says, it's a very kind and heartwarming gesture you just did, because that's what our great citizens of New York City did the days of and the days after of 9/11. And what they did was their outpour of support for all the first responders. And when I say first responders, there are no separate agencies. Police department, fire department, court systems, we were all one that day. And throughout that entire ordeal over the next months until May 2002, when it was closed down, we all worked side by side together. And day by day, we got through the situation. But going back to the citizens, they were phenomenal with their support back then. And as we were stated earlier, was bottom line was is people forget, and it's not like that today. And right now is we're losing federal monies. People have forgotten what went on. And you mentioned the media before; they portray things certain ways. I will tell you, the city of New York post 9/11 had numerous serious threats that through the direction of Police Commissioner Ray Kelly, the counterterrorism unit has thwarted. and they have their finger on the pulse with this.
And these are a lot of things we don't hear about.
A lot of things you don't hear about. You know, we'll hear about them in the city, but it doesn't get the news doesn't travel outside the city. I mean, there's been threats, confirmed threats, where individuals have been arrested and gone to trial. Some are awaiting trial. I mean, plots on our transit system.
You brought up one in particular was the a year ago, and that was the Times Square bomber. And you went and went a little bit more elaborate in as regards to the build-out and how the media portrayed him and how intelligent he actually was. And that's a done situation already.
I mean,
it was very played out after the fact. I wasn't even aware that he was been already prosecuted, and he's done.
Well, he's done. He copped the plea. Because
but you see what I'm saying, though, is the perception that goes out, it doesn't make money anymore.
Right.
It's not supporting advertising dollars for mass media. It's not something we need to really be concerned about.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And this individual, I read the papers each and every day. And when that incident happened back early May of 2010, he brought a car bomb into the heart of Times Square. Through our New York City Police Department bomb squad, they were able to mitigate that threat. The media portrayed it that he was some lone wolf wackadoo that was pretty naive when it came to putting bombs together. And that couldn't be further from the truth. He was part of a network. He was well-trained, very intelligent, put together sophisticated devices within that Pathfinder, Nissan Pathfinder. And it was our good fortune that he did make one mistake. However, all the other components that must be addressed in putting together a device as he did inside that car, he was right on the money with.
Yeah, so the elaborate components he had, but one of the real basic, simplistic ones, he messed up on.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, which, and you know, I think that goes even more importantly, I think the thing to focus on for our listeners is that this was all done to the part, you're talking Times Square, you're talking one of the busiest tourist meccas of the United States. And here you have Saturday, a weekend, which it's a nut house down there. So that's what, 42nd, 41st?
Right on the money, yep. Right
and you've got a young child that happens to see smoke coming out of a car that then alerts their parents, that then alerts a mounted police officer.
Correct.
And that's the way that this was caught.
And the mounted police officer made his notifications. And a lot of people, as I stated today, is the first thing is our responding patrol did a fantastic job in, one, securing. Number two is you got to evacuate. And you're talking tens of thousands of people in the heart of New York City, crossroads of the world. You're talking Theater District. You're talking Broadway. You're talking restaurants. You're talking hotels. Everybody had to be evacuated. They did a fantastic job in doing that. Because this bomb was so sophisticated, so well put out, it took hours for the bomb squad to mitigate the threat.
You know, based on where that was parked, because that was maybe, what, 10, 15 yards off the corner?
Yes.
For where it was left? What could have been the destruction? I mean, even structural for what was down there as well.
Well, the NYPD bomb squad, along with the FBI, they work hand-in-hand on jobs like this. They ended up reconstructing that car, and exactly with its components, the way it was. And this time they used the right formula, so to speak, to make it ignite. And there is videotapes of those explosions that are pretty impressive. And pretty impressive meaning it would have killed a number of individuals. They're estimating that it probably could have been in at least 100 plus in that vicinity. Plus the property damage and obviously the injuries to other people that may lose a limb, may lose their eyes, or be disfigured for the rest of their lives.
You guys both seem to come to the conclusion, and I'm going a little bit more from your presentation, Joe, but Tim as well. We still have a threat on home soil here. And it's still something we have to be concerned with?
Without a doubt. I mean, again, never forget, always prepare, and never let your guard down. Again, New York City, terrible to say, but we have these threats regularly. They are going to keep on coming. The police department has done everything in its power to thwart off these threats and further threats. But let's face it, we're in a city of 8 million plus people. You can't watch everyone every day. For someone to go into a mass populated area and detonate themselves, very, very difficult to stop. That's why we have to keep up our counterterrorism intel work and investigation so that we could put these, we can stop these individuals before they actually try to complete their acts.
Yeah. You have anything to add on that, Tim?
No, I mean, what I have to say is there's nobody better in the world than the NYPD when it comes to this. And under the leadership of Commissioner Kelly, I mean, you don't get more professional than that in picking the right people to lead the city and make the city safe. I live in Manhattan. I live on 42nd Street. And, you know, I can see when there's a threat in my neighborhood because all of a sudden there's cops everywhere. And they don't talk about it. They just come and do it. So, you know, the from my side, the fire department, they're, you know, trying to keep their eyes open and let the PD know when they see something that they don't like. I mean, that's kind of what happened in Times Square is the first two ladder company, four truck, they approached this smoking vehicle, and the lieutenant said, there's something really bad happening here. And they backed off, and they worked with the PD to evacuate. And, you know, I think we've been very lucky. I think that it only takes one time for them to slip through the cracks and get us.
Let's move a little forward here. You had brought up, and you're on the forefront of some components with health problems. And I was talking with Jim Tiganelli after the fact also, too, and it sounds reminiscent of Agent Orange.
Yeah.
Vietnam.
Yep.
And I know that there's been movies. Michael Moore has focused on some of those components, too. But, I mean, you're right there. And I think it comes a little bit more personal to you.
Sure. I mean, the number is, and this study will come out in August. Dr. Prezant from the fire department, who's one of the leading experts in lung disease in the world now, did a study, which will come out, and between September 11, 2001 and June of 2010, over 600 police officers, firefighters, and construction workers are dead or dying from cancer. It's a staggering number, and the number is growing quickly. Right now,
it's commonly respiratory too.
It's not. It's I would say mostly respiratory, but it's brain, it's liver, it's many different things, and this I suspect is going to continue to increase in frequency. We're probably burying one cop, fireman, or construction worker a week right now.
Jeez,
I think that eventually it will kill all of us that were there.
And you have it from the point of not only people in law enforcement, but you have in medical, you have civilians and people from afar that actually came over there, too, to try to help out with the relief and the search and rescue.
Sure. Cops and firemen came to help us from all over the country. Right, Joe?
Show of support was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But now a lot of these people are facing these health problems and attributing it back to what was they were exposed to down there. But the opposition that's being met is what? It's not true?
No,
Is there help available for them?
Well, I think that what this study is going to do, the city of New York has resisted labeling the deaths of the employees as related to 9/11. What the study will do is it will put that lie to rest. It will say this is why these guys have died, and you will support them. So the study was needed. Dr. Prezant saw it, and this will be the beginning of the city, the state, and the country acknowledging that these guys are victims of 9/11, just like everyone that died that day.
Gotcha. So health problems on the let's move to a different direction here. You guys are both involved, both big advocates on the speaking circuit, but you have some other individual projects going on. So let's start with you, Joe. You have a you're part of a special that's going to be on Discovery Channel. There's a little bit of a background that you shared with us today about how that was going to happen, then it wasn't going to happen, but then you retired. You're able to do so. Some people wanted you to stay pretty quiet.
Well, bottom line was there was never ever really a police perspective on 9/11, and while I was on active duty, there was one that was going to be done, and it was subsequently canceled, and I thought that that was the end of it, and kind of a story never to be told. And then last year, the company reached out to a number of retired personnel in the PD and asked if we'd be willing to try to have the story be told.
And that is that's going to be coming out. It's on. It's 9/11 crime scene investigators.
Right. It's hopefully it will air. I know it was shown in the UK. It was a huge success over in the UK, and will be on either Discovery or True TV, Court TV. It's all related under their parent company, but hopefully it will air around the 10th anniversary.
Yeah, I learned a lot. You know, I saw that today. I've never heard some of the stuff that was in that program. I thought it was very well done. For someone that was not there from law enforcement that didn't see it through your eyes, I think it's a fantastic show.
Even going down to the point of everybody can theorize and sympathize, and when you come down to the point of it's someone's job to determine if it's a hand, a bone fragment, to help identify someone's lost loved one is it's very surreal. It's almost hard to grasp. So the film is called 9/11 Crime Scene Investigators by Testimony Films. It's supposed to be out on Discovery Channel, probably closer to the memorial of 9/11 date. But I would assume that you can probably find it online as well. It's going to be out there if it's not on YouTube.
I'm sure it's not online as of now, but I imagine down the road it will be.
Yeah. Tim, what about you? You've got a film that you're a part of called Rebirth, produced by Jim Whitaker.
Right, yeah.
And that's going to be on Showtime, and there's a big prelude. That's going to be premiered on September 11th.
That's right. It will be on the Showtime television channel on September 11th in prime time. So it'll be like 7 or 8 o'clock at night, maybe 9, somewhere in there. It will premiere in the theaters, in one theater in New York and one theater in L.A., in August.
Tell us about Rebirth, though. What is it about?
Yeah, it's a time-lapse film. It's a documentary, hour and 45 or 50 minutes. And it's a time-lapse film, both inanimate and human. So Jim put cameras around Ground Zero in late 2001, early 2002, and started taking photographs of the site proper. So every 5 minutes, these cameras would take a picture. He did that for 8 years.
Oh, wow.
So now it's the largest time-lapse film project ever undertaken.
Wow.
So as you people would know, you see a flower bloom through time-lapse. You would actually see the rubble pile go down, and then the buildings come up out of the ground. So that's the inanimate side of it. He also did kind of a time-lapse project with five individuals, including me, who were directly affected by 9/11. And he followed our lives through the 8 years, through complete devastation and heartbreak. I mean, to the point of some people actually not wanting to live anymore, to be very kind about it. And through human resilience, and then back into hope and love, finding hope and love again. And you will not sit through this film with a dry eye.
Yeah, I can imagine so.
It premiered at Sundance to two standing ovations, rave reviews, and it's on track maybe to win some awards one day, I hope.
Yeah. You're involved in the healthcare bill that's going on right now as well. Give a little bit of what's going on with that. And you also have something coming up, and you're talking about Friday. a decision that's happening in the courts?
Well, we suspect Friday. The health care bill...
is that the Obama one?
No, that was a different one. Yeah, it wasn't quite that thick, 2,200 pages. But the health care bill to support the first responders who have gotten sick, are getting sick, and are going to get sick in their families was very contentious there for a while. There was a big battle. We supported it through my website, thebravest.com. And eventually it was passed unanimous. There was some resistance to it. Initially it was put in at $5.2 billion, and I think it wound up down around $2.3 billion. So in the end, I think it's fair. I think that the first responders are being taken, and the construction workers, everyone's being taken care of. And I'm proud of our country.
Last night, we ran into a small audio glitch, and we never actually broke for some commercials. So we're going to go ahead and do that right now and then continue on with the interview.
Hi, this is Matt LaFontaine from LaFontaine Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, and Saleen. And now during Minivan Month, we just announced a 2011 Ram Quad Cab 4x4 lease from $199 a month. That's just $49 a week or less, now through May 31st. Come to LaFontaine Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, and Saleen, or visit us on the web at TheFamilyDeal.com. Call 855-LaFontaine. Offer ends May 31st.
Hey, it's me, your furnace. I know you're going to shut me down soon, and I'm fine with that. I kept your family comfortable all winter long. I deserve a break. But while I'm thinking vacation, the air conditioner's getting nervous. We're under a lot of pressure to run all year long and not break down. So we're wondering why you don't give us a little more TLC. Maybe a checkup or a new part that helps us run more efficiently? My friends at Flame Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical know all about this. Right now, they've got a special on AC checkups that'll keep us running strong all year long. They've even got Bryant rebates of up to $1,100 if you have to replace us with an energy-efficient Bryant Evolution system. Either way, their NATE-certified technicians and unbeatable warranties guarantee that we'll always be there to keep your family in the comfort zone. Visit Flame on the web at flamefurnace.com. Flame and Bryant, whatever it takes.
Again, we ran into a small technical glitch last night, and we're going to pick up on the interview where we left off and finish off the interview with both.
It burnt to such an intense heating factor that it's literally melted the I-beams and the structures of where they entered.
And they've had, they've had pretty elaborate studies on recreations and even going back to the original architect and CAD drawings of how all that had happened and potentially played out with the trusses and melting those.
And the jet fuel from when the planes hit the upper portion of both towers, that jet fuel went down the elevator shafts, and then it ended up being a huge firebomb. And that's what brought down the towers. There's no doubt. I'll go to my grave with that.
You couldn't be more right, Joe. I mean, he's talking evidence. These are the most experienced evidence technicians in the world that did not find any evidence that there was anything, this was anything other than...
It wasn't a controlled demolition.
There was none of that. And I will tell you, I was under the buildings when they came down. I heard them come down. They came down around me. There were no separate explosions. These were building collapses due to the impact of the planes, number one. And number two, the jet fuel. You have to understand that when the plane goes into the building at such a velocity, they were full thrust going into these buildings, somewhere over 500 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And they went through these buildings. They destroyed the outer structure of the building, which is a structural part of the building.
Correct.
And they also went into the core of the building where the fire suppression systems were. They knocked out the sprinklers, they knocked out the standpipes, and they knocked out the sprayed-on fireproofing on the steel. It's a perfect storm to melt the steel with the high-intensity fire of the jet fuel. That is what happened. It angers me when credible people believe the crazy conspiracy theorist, because it takes away from what really happened that day. And what really happened that day is that radical Islamic terrorists who hate American freedom, who hate American equality, and wanted to destroy that, that is who did this. It's not the U.S. government. It's not the Jews. It's not anybody but those crazy, evil, bad guys that did that to us.
Yeah. Well, Tim and Joe, I appreciate you guys coming out here for the convention. I know that Jim Ticinelli and the rest of the guys at the Police Officers Association of Michigan, along with the hundreds of guests that have showed up as well, appreciate hearing your stories and feeling the brotherhood that you have definitely been portraying. I guess what's next for both of you? What are you guys working on? What's happening? Start with you, Joe.
Well, right now I'm still on the lecture tour, and basically I work with cops regularly, and I speak at conferences relating to crime scene investigations, and especially with DNA collection. DNA, a powerful law enforcement tool. And at this time now, at every conference, I always remind everyone in attendance, never forget what transpired on 9/11.
Yeah, absolutely. In the end of your presentation, you went ahead and went through all the different police officers that had lost your life. That was a really nice memorial. Thank you for doing that. If your website, someone want to get a hold of you and find out more.
Bottom line is, it's just my straight email. I don't really have a website.
Straight email address. All right, and you can contact us here at Palm to get in touch with him as well, or his public relations assistant. And what about you, Tim?
I'm going to continue working with the families. We have a bunch of projects coming up. One of the more fulfilling projects is going to be participating in the with the Office of Military Commissions. From the Department of Defense, who are the actual prosecutors who will prosecute Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and his cohorts that planned September 11th. We're going to screen Rebirth for their group to help them get in the right frame of mind before they start the proceedings.
Yeah.
I'm very much looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to their hopeful conviction. We'll continue with the court battle. And in the end, the best revenge we can have on these evil people is to love and laugh again. And I intend to do a lot of that with my family and my friends.
Yeah. And you can contact him and follow him as well, thebravest.com. Touch real quick on the base of your website and what you have going on with there and why you started it.
Yeah, The Bravest, we started in 1999. Basically, it's the New York City Fire Department radio live on the internet. And it turned into more of kind of an all-about the New York Fire Department website. It's very popular, and it's gotten us a lot of attention. And, you know, we've been able to get the truth out about the families through that website to a lot of people. So we'll continue to do that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, gentlemen, both, thank you very much for coming down and spending some time and taking some time out of the festivities tonight. And we wish you the best in the future as well.
Thanks for the beer.
All right, thanks,
guys.
Thank
you very much. My pleasure. Thank you.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of the POAM Podcast Radio Show. I want to remind you that each and every month you can find every single podcast online on Apple iTunes. Just search for POAM. They're also available for download or for live listen on our website. Visit us at POAM.net. Get on our newsletter and send us all of your comments and suggestions for future shows.